Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders. I'm Dr. Jean Chirac-Abad here with Dr. Joe Palmer and Dr. Ersin Religioso. Dr. Ersin, Dr. E will be joining us as a regular on Therapy Insiders. We're happy to have him. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Jean. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. If you guys haven't heard, our beloved Baltimore Orioles just swept the ALDS, so we're going kind of crazy here in Maryland. Dr. E is a bit north of us and doesn't quite understand the fervor and the passion of us Baltimore Orioles fans, but I have a feeling that eventually he'll understand.
Yeah, I'm not that much on the inside.
You'll get there, my friend. You'll get there. Okay. But aside from the Orioles doing awesome, we wanted to talk about C-spine dysfunction, pain, and just common presentations that we see in some of the treatments that we use. We had some comments on Reddit, and somebody asked, a fellow listener, asked what we thought on and some of our thoughts and perspectives on neck pain. So that's what we're going to cover today. So let's start out with, you know, mechanical neck pain, whatever that means to you, typically joint or some myofascial pain, joint involvement. Start out with you, Joe. What do you commonly see in the clinic with neck pain, let's say without crazy, ridiculous symptoms or paresthesias?
I think if you take out the paresthesias and ridiculous symptoms, what you're looking at is myofascial or segmental dysfunction of the cervical spine, and that's kind of a chicken or the egg kind of situation, where is it a segmental dysfunction that's driving the myofascial restrictions, or are the myofascial restrictions driving the segmental dysfunction? And so, you know, part of that, you're trying to treat and continuously assess to see what the real driver is, because that's what you have to really manage. From there, you're looking at a lot of things. You're going to look at their posture. You're going to look at below the cervical spine to see what kind of basically foundation they have that is influencing their cervical spine dysfunction.
Now, before I ask Dr. E the same question, I want to go off on a bit of a tangent. You know the chicken and the egg comment? So my theory on the chicken and the egg is that the egg came first, because you had two different species come together, reproduce, and make an egg, and that egg was a new species, which is a chicken. Does that make sense? Because every time I hear that's my theory on the chicken or the egg, because I feel like that shouldn't be much of a question. The egg had to come first.
Well, that's settled.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, done. Do you want to handle the Big Bang Theory too?
Well, that's pretty conclusive.
We'll get to that while we're here.
Let's save it for the next podcast. So, Dr. Okay. Yi, how about you? Neck pain, C-spine dysfunction, what's your common presentation? I know you kind of, your general approach is more movement-based and a little bit away from just looking at the biomechanical approach, which kind of what Joe was describing.
Yeah, and you know, it's good that we have different ways to look at this, otherwise we'd all be repeating each other. So in general, yeah, I've moved away from typical biomechanics. I mean, in my head, I still think there may be a culprit, and hopefully someone proves that there's one, you know, over the other. There is research via Stecco, who teaches fascial manipulation courses, that showed that in individuals with pain, there is, you know, thickening of fascia in the cervical spine. But still, I mainly look at repeated motions and asymmetries via the SFMA. So typically, the presentations that I see, and again, if we're taking radiculopathies or paresthesias out of it, there is going to be potential other than neck pain. You know, in a bilateral presentation, it may have bilateral headaches radiating to the frontal or the temporal area, or dizziness. And unilateral, it's going to present a little differently. So typically when I see in a movement assessment, I'll see if with a bilateral central complaint, they're going to have a loss of cervical retraction and or cervical retraction with overpressure and extension. And for a unilateral complaint, and this is unilateral radiating anywhere to the scapula, to the arm and everything, and, you know, even though we're not talking about paresthesias, but typically in a unilateral complaint, say radiating left upper trap, left cervical pain, retraction and side bending to the left is going to be limited. And I just call that a loss of ability to load because I've kind of moved on from traditional MDT theory. I don't look at it as reducing a disc. I just see it as a loss of ability to bear weight or load those same side facets. Because in general, you know, what does everyone do when they have left-sided neck pain? Every rational person doesn't go toward it. They go away. So they lose the ability. Yeah, they lose the ability to go toward. And it's the first asymmetry I look for, and I find often by loading it, they get better.
So let's say you have a patient that comes in. Patient is, I don't know, 38 years old, left-sided C-spine pain, no traumatic event, kind of insidious onset. You do your myotome testing, you do your dermatome testing. If you do that kind of stuff, say myotomes, you found 4+ at C4, C5. Dermatome were normal. Limited left rotation of the C-spine. What will be your approach after that, Joe?
Well, I'm gonna look through the joint mobility, but I'm also gonna I want to put him through a couple of special tests. Now, Urson, are you talking about when you talk about repeated motion and loading the left side? Talking something similar to like a Sperling's foraminal compression test, or describe that movement for me.
Yeah, it's very much like a Sperling's, and a lot of people look at it at that even when I teach it in my courses, but really it's when you do a cervical retraction and side bend to the left, there's not as much extension. I mean, I tell people that you are, as a home exercise program, you're pulling kind of to the back opposite corner. But that's only so that they kind of stay in the coronal plane rather than, you know, pull into any flexion. Because it may seem like they actually have full side bending with retraction, but if they happen to pull into flexion, they're unloading a little bit. So I want them to stay in neutral or at least pull into, you know, a little extension as they're retracted. So, you know, between like sternum elevated, lumbar lordosis, get the head over the, you know, the scapula, it does somewhat look like a quadrant test, even though I don't view it as that. I just look at it as a movement. Because the typical quadrant test interpretation is kind of like, oh, it hurts, so I want to open it and gap it. And that's like traditional manual therapy versus, I find that loading that side is actually what gets the most rapid results because the patient is probably already repeatedly unloading it.
Is there a movement like that you have on your website, the manualtherapist.com, that we can have the readers reference or the listeners reference?
Yeah, I've probably shot several videos or even demonstrated in some cases. And if not, I'll just, I'm fairly certain even on my website or my YouTube channel, I've demonstrated it several times. And if not, I'll just shoot a new one.
Okay, so we'll find it or we'll shoot a new one and we'll link it on therapyinsiderspod.com to Dr. E's blog of themanualtherapist.com. So, Joe, great question. But going back, you have a patient with left-sided neck pain. I want to hear your approach before I ask Dr. E, especially or particularly about three joints that I think a lot of clinicians are a bit hesitant about treating, whether they're uncomfortable because of kind of the stigma of the danger of treating them, or two, just because it's just so unfamiliar, and those being the OA, AA, and to a big extent, the CT junction as well. I feel like they get kind of under looked at or not really given a thorough once over. And I know how important they are, at least when I see patients with neck pain.
Well, the big key there, Gene, is that you specifically said that they have a significant loss in cervical rotation. And you know you're getting most of your cervical rotation from your upper cervical spine. So what I'm looking at there is the the OA to really see if anything is restricted there, and then following down into the upper cervical spine to test the mobility, segmental mobility, specifically looking to see if any of the joints aren't moving or are jammed. You can also you should also look to see what myofascial structures are limiting that movement. Maybe there are facilitated segments that are causing muscles to be chronically tight, we can take care of those as well.
So, Doctor, how about you? Do you do a lot with OAAA or CT junction? I know I've seen your CT junction manipulation video. How about the cranio-vertebrals?
Basically, I do teach. When I get around to mobilizing or manipulating any joints, I am pretty, I try to pay special attention to the junctional areas, basically, whether it's OA, CT, TL, or LS. I mean, you know, looking back at biomechanical theory, if I delve back into that, there are more facet tropisms, and for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's that, maybe it's just the natural asymmetries, but they do have the most joint dysfunction. And in general, I am looking at gross movements via repeated motions and the selective functional movement assessment. So by and large, I don't do a lot of that, but when I find an asymmetry in gross either functional movement pattern or osteokinematic motion, I still treat those areas, assuming there's dysfunction there, because most of the time there are, and that's just like a good clinical practice pattern. So I've gotten away from doing a lot of passive intervertebral motion testing, because in general, since you can't really be specific anyway, you try to be as safe and specific and gentle with your techniques and quick if you're doing a thrust, but you still kind of get the same result. So I've kind of taken, 5 to 10 minutes off of my assessment by not doing the passive testing, but still doing the same treatments.
Yeah, and that could definitely work for some, but I think you have to be fairly comfortable with your skill set and your experience of what you're seeing to be at that level. I think a lot of clinicians, especially in the orthopedic realm and manual therapy, as you're developing your skill, I think there's a lot of dependence on your hands and feeling the big restrictions, whether it's the tautness from the myofascial restrictions, like Joe was saying, with the segmental dysfunctions and eliciting tenderness, or just gross restrictions in the facets, which I don't know about you guys, but gross jammed joints, I don't think it happens that often, and it happens here and there. If you see a joint, or if you feel a joint that's barely moving, how do you get it to move in the upper cervical spine? How do you manipulate it and mobilize it? What do you do for that?
For me, it depends on a lot of things, Gene. Not only the end feel, which you're talking about, but I'm having a conversation with the patient. I'm trying to figure out how long the problem's been going on. I'm trying to get an understanding on what their comfort level is and what kind of technique they're looking for in our treatment, and really taking their preference into account when they have to be on board with anything that you're going to do. So making sure that you've consented them and really given them all the evidence for your treatment, I think is very important. But generally, I will say that I feel very very comfortable doing a manipulation on the appropriate patient, and if the patient has a jammed joint and they're younger than 60, that's kind of an arbitrary number, but you just want to make sure that there's not a lot of arthritis stenosis kind of things that put them at higher risk, especially when you're dealing with manipulating around the cervical spine and the vertebral artery. Once I have that conversation with them and they're on board, I will manipulate, but I want to know that I'm targeting a joint that I believe is dysfunctional, I want to have my hands on. I want to know that that I'm trying to target a specific joint. Now, whether I'm specific or not, right? That's the thing, and I understand that you can't be as specific as you want to be, but for my clinical practice, I am always trying to have a purpose with whatever I'm doing, and so if I can get my hands on and feel a restriction, then I at least have a goal, and I'm trying to reassess right after the movement. I will say that people that present with chronic symptoms that have gone on for months and years, I find those much better to mobilize first and really give that a full shot. A lot of the literature is coming out saying that in the cervical spine, mobilization can be just as effective as manipulation. So I do want to make sure I give that a shot before I use any more aggressive techniques per se.
So I think that with that research that you're mentioning, I think it's also important to integrate it into daily practice. So mobilization can be as effective at reducing pain, but it's also effective at essentially warming up the joint, getting the person ready. Because if you thrust, and I'm sure it's happened to most people, especially people that are listening, when you thrust a joint that's not ready to be thrusted, whether it's the spasm from the tissues around it or it's not the proper technique, you know instantly that it wasn't ready for that. And then you might do some soft tissue techniques. You might have him doing some breathing techniques, and all of a sudden the joint just cavitates doing that. So I see that a lot, when just not wanting to rush the technique, even though you know it's the right technique, but the person's body isn't ready for that technique. So, Dr. E, how do you figure out when a person is ready for a manipulation? And more importantly, how do you figure out that an OA or AA or a CT junction is the joint that's involved?
In general, again, I'm not necessarily looking at a joint specifically, but I do look at a movement. And, you know, for a lot of the headache patients, or just with general pain to the scapula, which is a typical referral pattern for upper cervical, I would just passively assess whether or not they have a hardish and kind of end feel for the upper cervical spine. And I made a decision a long time ago after learning AA rotatory thrust. I practiced once or twice when I was doing fellowship, and I just thought, because I even heard at the time Stanley Paris has given up that particular technique, just because of who he is. And, you know, if he lobbies for us, and he's always trying to lobby for our practice act to remain intact state by state, that, you know, he should, if he were ever cause a problem, it would be huge. And that was even before I started teaching all over the place. So I just use alternative techniques like mobilization with movements, or, you know, for upper cervical spine. Even for the mid cervical spine, I tend to do down glide thrust or translatory thrust and avoid rotation. However, someone even wrote a guest blog for me, who used to teach with James Dunning, and said that there is research out there that basically said the same kind of, you know, VBI or vertebral issue could potentially happen or has been demonstrated even with cervical mobilization, and it certainly makes sense. But how do I make that decision? Basically, if there's still movement asymmetry after my initial technique, I always do some sort of ISTM or tissue prep first, typically ISTM with the edge. And that's why I ask in my courses, and my question to most clinicians is the restriction you're feeling bone or tone? So many times we think it's some sort of joint issue, but once you get rid of the tone, you know, we know from a neuropopulation, the harder you push on tone, the more tone pushes back at you. So it's like one of those things where I used to just mash a lot of first ribs. And then when I first got it, you know, you feel like, oh, this one's a little elevated and it's a little harder. So I'm going to push in this and improve that unilateral kind of upper quarter presentation. But then when I started doing very, very light ISTM, I just noticed that when I went to go back and either check for segmental dysfunction or first rib, that all I was really doing was feeling tone. And I think if you guys try needle, you would probably agree, because a lot of people I know who initially started off with a lot of manipulation, mobilization, they got into needling or some of the soft tissue work. If you end up doing that first and then you reassess the segmental mobility, that what you thought was some sort of segmental restriction was really just tone, and once it's reset, it's kind of what you were feeling there is not there anymore. So, you know, there still has to be some kind of movement asymmetry left. It's just that it's rare. So it seems like most of the patients who are manipulating now are either those who request it, because there's that cervical clinical prediction rule that I really like that says that, you know, if a patient has a positive expectation of a benefit from cervical thrust, then you should really perform a thrust along with, you know, the movement asymmetries and it being acute and low FABQ and those things. So yeah, if a patient prefers it, then I will probably do it. So if they've had a previous positive expectation of it, but in general, I find that with the stuff that I'm doing, I do it less than once or twice a month these days, unless I'm teaching a course, which then I will actually do it a lot, but just at that course.
So that's a lot of good information. I do dry needling, and I think again it's a means to an end to figure out what the syndrome is, and I call it a syndrome because if you really think about it, rarely is it not. You know, unless it's super acute, your body compensates, you build segmental, you build a dysfunction, myofascial restrictions or compensatory joint restrictions. So I think what you're talking about, Dr. E, is you see these compensations build up in the tone of the tissue surrounding the joints, the facets, and once you treat it, whether it's dry needling or myofascial release or muscle energy or hold relax, PNF, or mobilizations, kind of oscillatory mobilizations for proprioceptive mechanical input, which helps defacilitate that segment. All those are great at cleaning up or clearing up some of these compensations that happen right away. And I think that the big picture to take away from this is that these are all perspectives that work together. And then if you try to take them apart separately, whether manipulations or just movement or just myofascial work, I mean, you're only getting pieces. But if you combine all of those together, I mean, that's a powerful, powerful treatment perspective and way to do it. I can't think of anything better if you apply all those concepts together. And that's how I see. That's how I treat in the clinic. It's, you know, figure out, is it the joints? Is it the restrictions? Because there will always be a movement restriction. That's kind of what we're designed to find, is where is that movement restrictions? How are they limited in movement? So figure it out on the biomechanical level. Figure it out on the movement level, and then fix it. Simple as that, right?
Easy as that most of the time. That's in simple mechanical neck pain. And I think that, you know, McKenzie does have some research that basically says that when they looked at a majority of people coming in, several of the faculty members, and they were just classifying them according to their movement system, you know, people think it's just acute, but they just took like a population over a certain amount of time. And I can't remember the exact study, but they found that, you know, anywhere between 70 to 80% of them were derangements, or what I call a rapid responder. So, and it does make sense, because very few people have that chronically centrally sensitized, like fibromyalgia type presentation or myofascial pain syndrome, where, you know, the chronic MVAs that we really, that everyone has trouble with. Most people, you should have rapid results within the first 2 to 3 visits, if not the first visit, you know, and the other two are just to kind of like solidify it.
Right, exactly. So with that, we want, it's kind of hard to describe and by just talking some of these techniques and the way we treat and kind of what we see. So let us know which of these techniques you want to see. I know Dr. E's got a bunch of these on his website and his subscription channel and YouTube. So we'll post this again, as always, on iTunes and therapyinsiderspod.com and Dr. E's website, themanualtherapist.com. But let us know, comment what techniques you actually want to see. We'll get some videos together, or we'll unearth some in the vault, in the Dr. E vault. You have a vault still, right? It's a big, big old vault with that spinning opening door thing.
Pretty much, yes. Just like on kind of Get Smart with a lot of doors. I don't know. Many of our listeners probably don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. But
yeah. Any lasers?
Yes, lots of lasers.
All right.
Wait, are you saying lasers or like quote, you know, quotation marks, lasers?
No, like laser, like freaking laser beams.
Sharks with lasers.
Yeah, sharks with lasers.
All right, this podcast is quickly going downhill. All right, so let us know, back on track. Plenty of tangents today. Let us know what you want to see, what you want us to put together for you in terms of the C-spine. Do you want to see the CT junction manipulation? Do you want to see our assessment of craniovertebral joints, manipulation of craniovertebral joints? Do you want to see Dr. E's movement assessment of the C-spine? We'll get it all together for you guys. We just need to know, and gals, we just need to know what you want to see. Simple as that. And we'll get it to you, right?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Will do.
So, as always, thanks for listening. You can find us on therapyinsiders.com. You can find Dr. E and his vault of information at themanualtherapist.com. And where else can they find you? I know you have like 70 million websites.
You can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, Google+, you know, subscribe on Feedly, whatever you want to do. I'm everywhere.
He is everywhere. Yes. So like him on Facebook. He's he needs a hug once in a while, so a like is just as good. We all do. And we'll see you guys in a week or so. Let us know if not the videos, let us know what else you want us to talk about. Thanks for the listener on Reddit pointing out about the C-spine and wanting to hear about it. So there it is. So thanks for listening. Dr. Gene Chirac right here with Dr. Joe Palmer and Dr. Ersten Religiosen from The Manual Therapist. Talk to you guys later.
Have a great week.
Good night.
Go O's.